You're listening to Riot Gear, expert conversations on the things we have learned, helping business owners improve their digital maturity. And now here's your host, Rob Merkowitzer.
Thanks for joining us for our third session in our podcast series. Today, I'm joined by Michael Van Ruin, otherwise known as MVR, who's our CTO and principal consultant for our technical architecture and design group here at Riot Solutions. MVR, today we want to cover a few things around why an architecture-first approach. Maybe we can start off with your background and what's led you to leading up the architecture group here at Riot.
Sure, no problems. My background basically started at the very base level of, you know, as basic as repairing and maintaining PCs, all the way through to today doing large-scale design and deployment configuration, etc. My interest around architecture, I guess, started many years ago where we moved from doing traditional endpoint maintenance and support to looking at the larger picture, specifically moving into communications and networking. I was probably fortunate in the timing of joining the industry, I think with most of us, at the early wave of the networks growing and becoming important and part of the infrastructure, the old, you know, live, learn and play by the network. But more importantly, I did doing for a long time, so hands and feet, being an engineer on the ground, configuring, installing, maintaining and managing and working at many integrators, large and small, through the years. And over probably the last 12 or 15 years, I've focused on design and architecture, realizing that there was a big gap in the actual early stages of putting something together. Traditionally, it would be sold by somebody and you'd have to make it work, and quickly realized that like an architect designs a building and then a builder builds it, is that if you're able to get in early and help navigate that component first, understanding the customer's pain points, problems and challenges, you could lead on to, I guess, helping set the scene rather than having to try and make it work later on.
You make a good point there, MVR. We seem to have gone somewhere between full-blown enterprise architecture through to, as you mentioned, almost build it and they will come. From a vendor and a technology perspective. What are you seeing at the moment with our customers? I know that we are quite specific in terms of us calling it technical architecture and design as opposed to enterprise. What's the difference?
When we started the idea of technical architecture and design within Riot, we specifically focused on technical architecture, knowing that enterprise architecture has been around a long time and was particularly focused, I guess, probably at the higher level and end-to-end with a methodology around it. Our focus on technical architecture was exactly that, to fill that gap from enterprise architecture around outcomes to how do we actually execute it from a technical level, and then how do we, you know, move that into the deployment and support. Realistically, we fill one of the models of the traditional system, like a TOGAF. You know, we fit right into that, and we don't do the end-to-end because we find that, again, the architecture from a technical point of view is lacking. So customers buy a solution based on a silo and deploy it based on that, but there's no actual forethought about what impact does that have to the rest of the environment, network, systems, applications. And all that. So we found a particular gap where customers probably need like an architecture as a service where they want to transform a business vision into a technical outcome.
Right. So in a way, it's a way to get some quick wins on a few tactical outcomes, but also drive to a longer term strategy.
Absolutely. What we find is that probably the disconnect between the vision statement, the traditional vision statement, we want to be here, but how do we actually get there? That's always missing. They try and build the, how do we get there in pieces rather than take it as a journey. Yep.
One of the things we've been involved in a lot over the last 3 or 4 years is SD-WAN. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be one of those new buzzwords and terms that we're bumping into, not only from a vendor and a technology wave perspective, but customers now having it very high on their agenda. Mm-hmm. What's your definition of SD-WAN, and what actually is the potential and the opportunity for clients using that technology or solution, or is it both?
Yeah, look, it's both. So realistically, SD-WAN is a culmination of technologies that have been around for a very long time. Traditional internet tunneling protocols, visibility, security, et cetera. And cleverly, we're moving into a very software-driven world. We're going away from the hardware, you know, being the centre of the solution to being very software orchestrated. And for me, SD-WAN, you know, covers a number of areas. Firstly, it helps customers or particular customers involved with, first of all, you know, quicker deployment, easier configurations, uncoupling themselves from a particular carrier or service provider, being able to have more flexibility. But the benefits of it are pretty significant from a point of view of that, and it's probably leading to where we're going to be in the future, which is today the data center and applications are the center of the network, and traditionally we build a private network to get there, secure it, and then maybe use internet through that, where we're now moving to this model of the user is the center of the network, being able to connect to many services, very cloud orientated, consumerized compute, storage, cloud applications, similar to your mobile phone. You know, it's just an application. You just use it on there. You don't think about where it lives, et cetera. The other driver for customers around SD-WAN is, as I said, quick to market, but also the security, being able to push the security to the edge, get the visibility, automate and orchestrate, plus particularly, as I said, get away from a single carrier or solution provider to provide the whole service.
So single carrier, I mean, that's pretty much what we've been dealing with for probably close to 20 years now. Yep. And even with the creation of the internet, there were some early adopters trying to run traffic somewhat securely over the internet as a cheaper way, but it probably wasn't as reliable or nowhere near as reliable as it is these days. You've come up with a concept called Pick Your Carrier, which I know you've posted a few articles on LinkedIn and used a lot in your presentation. What's the basis behind this Pick Your Carrier concept?
Sure. So customers who, it's very, very SD-WAN driven, first of all. So Pick Your Carrier methodology that I came up with was around exactly that, around helping customers understand that this transition of consumerization, moving to SD-WAN, and the drivers such as NBN being able to provide larger bandwidth, better internet services, more consistent experience, more reliable, et cetera, is one of the drivers. But the penny dropped for me when I was doing a presentation for a large national organisation who was moving to SD-WAN, and during the executive presentation we were talking about their service provider who maintained and managed the network end-to-end, and the executive still didn't get the idea that this gave them the opportunity to pick and choose whatever carrier they needed where they needed it. That they had this vision of, we're just going to swap one carrier for another and it's just a big transition, right? And then we're going to have the same problems of sticking with one. So by re-emphasising to them that choice becomes theirs. So for them as a national provider, they're able to choose fibre in the city, if that makes sense. They're also able to use 4G in a remote location where that's all they get. But they don't have to particularly stick with one person. They can pick and choose their services. And the methodology became exactly that, is about picking your carrier, where the most appropriate suitability is.
So how is that affecting business cases when they're looking at SD-WAN? I mean, traditionally in IT, it's all about making sure that you're refreshing whatever you've got today as legacy into something tomorrow that's going to last as long as possible. That becomes more a technical discussion than it does a business case discussion. How is SD-WAN pushing that discussion more towards the business side than it is to the speeds and feeds side?
I guess the key component around SD-WAN is being able to create an overlay network over any transport mechanism. That's kind of the fundamentals of it. The Pick Your Carrier, again, allows you to choose your particular service provider where it fits. But the benefits from a business point of view and the drivers are around that they are able to go to more competitive market landscape now. So they're able to not necessarily go to the one provider and get a price for a service. They're able to pick and choose and actually make it very competitive. And in many of the cases, we're seeing our customers who are moving to Pika Carrier SD-WAN is they're actually shortening their life cycle on contracts. So they go away from the 3 to 5 year contract to maybe a 1 or 2 year, because it is kind of just consumer type services that you can buy quite easily. It's on the NBN, you can add it and swap it out easily. And in fact, we've even seen some that build SLAs into their contracts. If you don't perform, we can swap you out. The ownership is then that the customer maintains and manages that overlay network themselves and buys purely carriage for carriage sake, as opposed to being shackled to it, having to decouple that and then swap it out.
Right, so overall, commercially better off, contract-wise, much more agile, mm-hmm. and potentially a more secure and resilient network.
And in fact, we find customers now also, when I say pick a carrier, let's take a scenario where traditionally they would buy one service for one site and the service provider provide that, have SLA on it. Customers are now able to get a more cost-effective service, more bandwidth, more reliability, more resiliency, etc., but also able to add a second carrier from a different provider in the same location, giving them the ability to a load share, but also have the resiliency. It also makes the carriers and service providers more competitive, because they know that they have to be more competitive now and have to just provide a carriage service that works, reliable, gives them performance. Yep.
Great, thanks for that, MVR. We'll just move on a little bit further now, I suppose an extension to this subject really, which is what we're hearing a lot about now, which is multi-cloud, mm-hmm. Which I suppose in a lot of ways is the next phase of, once the SD-WAN solution or business case solution and implementation's done, it's now looking at data centers and what you mentioned at the start of the podcast around applications and users being centric to the network. Mm-hmm. What's your view on multi-cloud and whether that's actually a real possibility for large enterprise organizations to look at?
So multi-cloud for me is definitely a current and future state architecture. What I mean by that is, and where customers are in their life cycle, is data centers today are in the early phases of where SD-WAN was 5 years ago. Customers are realizing that they have the opportunity to put things in the cloud and choose whichever cloud provider you like. There were obviously horror stories about early adopters who have moved large amounts of systems into the cloud and not being able to get them out. But I think the market is mature. There's more competitiveness in that space. There's a lot more cloud providers. And customers are now looking at, similar to the carrier decision, they're moving from lock-in of paying for your own investment, running your own hardware, and how do we actually get rid of that expense and buy the data center as a service. Additionally to that, I'm now talking about pick your public cloud, which is an additional same kind of concept as pick your carrier, where eventually with customers repurposing programs into SaaS offerings or recutting code into ability to be between any cloud provider will give us that vision that we've had for a while, which is have access to all these cloud providers, move workloads around, drive cost. And there's some very smart initiatives happening in that. I think if we fast forward five or seven years, most customers are going to be data center as a service. There's going to be very little on-prem except for exceptional cases, and the ability then to do the similar thing about you're not performing, let's move my workload, is definitely where it is. So I think we're going to end up with that actual multi-hybrid cloud, if that makes sense.
Another acronym you can add to your next LinkedIn post. One of the things that I know you've had a lot of experience with and one of quite a large area of growth for us at the moment is in critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Your background in transport and manufacturing and even hospitals and so forth, something that we've been working with, I suppose, for the last 10 years, but only now starting to see a real desire to see this OT-IT convergence. What's your view on that in terms of the maturity of that market? There's a lot of fear around, obviously, the cybersecurity component and the uptime, real-time type nature of those networks. How are things like SD-WAN and multi-cloud and cybersecurity playing into that other domain now of critical infrastructure and operational technology?
It really depends what part we're talking about from a customer point of view. What I mean by that is there's operational technology. People normally call that a SCADA network, but realistically, you know, SCADA isn't just an application that lives on these critical networks. For me, if we holistically just look at OT on its own, if for people in the industry, it's kind of going back 5 or 10 years from a network plumbing point of view. There's still very long life cycles in that space on upgrading equipment. You know, they don't do what traditional IT does and replace every 5 to 7 years. It's kind of 10 plus years. It's the opportunity to refresh and improve those areas is quite large or extensive. The second part is that a lot of them are only just adopting IP today, and it sounds strange to us, but you know, a lot of them are still moving from, you know, serial analog type devices, putting things on the network, and dealing with that. Second part of that is, so I think that will still be contained very, very closely to actually where it lives. And we've talked a lot about edge compute, you know, CCTV stored locally, which all makes sense. There's sometimes applications can't live in the cloud, and OT is particularly in that category. Where customers are kind of doing between IT and OT, what we're seeing is more the IT-OT function becomes more management and control and adding security and more intelligence and visibility of the networks, and not necessarily changing the way they operate, but actually getting that visibility and control and identifying vulnerabilities. Then we talk about IoT, because I think they should be separate. People always put IoT with OT. And the IoT is very much more cloud-driven, right? We're buying a sensor, we're buying a widget, we're buying a cloud application that controls that. And I think that, you know, those should be treated that way. There should be an IT and OT, and then a separate silo of IoT. And that is certainly driven very much by cloud. In fact, cloud drives a lot of IoT because it's, you know, ingesting lots of sensor data, crunching it in big compute platforms, and then providing a customer result. So
right, gives it the scale, really, doesn't it? Which IoT is massive for. So, you know, in enterprise land or enterprise IT land for the last 10 years, we've always sought to see security, you know, cybersecurity, as trying to be an enabler. And an added value component to the network. I don't think it's ever been seen like that. But is that something that we're actually seeing in that OT world, that there's benefit in using IT to help secure the cyber risk side of these networks, which have potentially never seen the light of day?
Yes. Look, absolutely. I think one benefit that the OT environments will obtain out of this whole process is absolutely security is front of mind for everybody, right? So, and that comes down from the board level on a point of view that they're responsible. So, you know, if they're a customer that has an OT environment, what have we done in the past? Before, that was always handed to a service provider or a system integrator, a large system integrator, build it, maintain it, and not worry about it. The products are being produced, things are being manufactured, you know, it runs. But now with connectivity of IT, you know, wanting to know about that asset, wanting to report on it, and the requirements around reporting on that have obviously pushed into it. The benefit I talk about for OT in the life cycle is, A, because they're a little bit behind in life cycle refresh that we've been used to, and the opportunities come up now, we've got a lot of learnings from enterprise IT. So enterprise IT, the learnings on maintaining and managing and securing networks at a very base level, not jumping too far to the future, actually helps OT get in a better position than they are today, first of all, but also gives them a solid platform. And I've had this discussion with some of the vendors about, you know, adopting technology for technology's sake. Sometimes, and particularly OT, you can just stick with traditional methodologies and traditional standardizations. You don't need to, you know, create virtual networks for everything or virtualize everything to the extent that we do in enterprise IT, because that's always quickly evolving. But why don't we just pause a little bit, stick with traditional foundations, because it all becomes about the ask for them, you know, resiliency, reliability, redundancy. Yep.
So whether it's enterprise IT or OT, or IoT for that matter, what's your advice to clients around why taking an architecture first approach benefits where they're going?
Taking an architecture first approach by customers resolves, from my opinion and experience, from what we've seen from customers, having architecture involved earlier, and particularly technical architecture, as I said in the beginning of the podcast, is that, you know, we fill that gap between, you know, the very high level business cloud fluffy statements that most businesses make to actually making it happen. The second part is, you know, tell me where a building or a house or a road or a tunnel has been built with it without architecture first, right? So understanding the specification requirements and the outcome and then building that first so that the delivery happens correctly is imperative. And I think the industry for a very long time has been very much around, I've got a small problem here, I'll throw a siloed solution at it and then I'll do another one and do another one and do another one, and we end up with this pain point that they've got today. And in fact, a lot of our customers, it's not greenfield, it's a lot more about re-architecting what they've got. So they've got, you know, quite a substantial investment, they've made the right investments in areas, but how do we standardize that? It's kind of like having a house and wanting to put an extension on it. Before we do that, what does the architect look like? What do we need to consider? What compliance from a security point of view do we need to do? But I feel that why architecture is so important is because without that foundational building block, everything else, does falls apart.
So the digital plumbing, you might say.
Yes, the absolute digital plumbing. If you get the digital plumbing correct, everything else is okay. Yep. I mean, at the end of the day, if your toilet's broken, you really know about it. But when it works, it just works, right?
True. Very true. So on that note, we might wrap it up. Thanks very much, MVR, for your insights. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to bringing you another podcast as part of this series shortly.